Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. And here's something I learned recently. James E. Boothberg has a wicked sense of humor. Wait. Let me back up for a moment, because I imagine you're asking, who is James Boothberg? All right. He's a federal judge. He serves on the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, which is kind of a big deal job, because 8 judges from the D.C. Circuit eventually went on to become justices on the Supreme Court. Jurists including Chief Justice Warren Burger, the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and conservative superstars Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, John Roberts, and Brett Kavanaugh. But back to Boothberg. Turns out he's funny. I mean, I wouldn't have expected it, because typically he sounds like a pretty straightforward guy. Here he is in a 2021 video produced by the United States courts to celebrate Constitution Day.
What's unique about the American constitutional system and its checks and balances is that, unlike in foreign countries, judges here are appointed for life. As a result, we are under no political pressure from whatever ruling party may govern to follow that party's wishes.
But just beneath that heard it all before judicial seriousness beats the heart of a comedian. See, back in 2021, Boothberg dismissed an antitrust case brought by the Federal Trade Commission against Facebook. But last week, Boothberg gave the FTC the green light to proceed. And he did so with really colorful language. His opinion begins, "Second time lucky." No, seriously, those are the first 3 words of the opinion. "Second time lucky." He continues, "The Federal Trade Commission's first antitrust suit against Facebook Incorporated stumbled out of the starting blocks last June." Oh, that's gotta hurt. But then he goes on to explain that, quote, "The court left ajar for the agency to amend the complaint and reinstate the suit. Eagerly accepting such an invitation, the FTC has filed an amended complaint." Can't you just see the eager Fed regulators bursting through the slightly propped judicial door with their new filing?
Oh, yeah!
A bit later in the decision, Judge Boothberg straight clowns Facebook by writing, "The company let fly a new arrow this time around. The court believes it misses the target." Burn! And he winds up with this zinger. Whether the FTC will be able to prove its case at summary judgment and trial is anyone's guess. Okay. I know it's not exactly Def Comedy Jam, but it's not every day that a district court opinion paints such a distinct and colorful picture of an eager government prosecutor and an arrogant corporate giant. And I, for one, appreciate Judge Boothberg dropping some nerdy legal giggles in the midst of this very serious matter. It's something Senator Lindsey Graham managed back in 2018 when he asked Mark Zuckerberg to name his biggest competitor during a Senate Judiciary and Commerce Committee hearing.
Who's your biggest competitor?
Senator, we have a lot of competitors.
Who's your biggest?
I think the categories of... Do you want just one? I'm not sure I can give one, but can I give a bunch?
Eventually, Senator Graham just got straight to the point by asking Zuckerberg whether Facebook is a monopoly.
Is it an alternative to Facebook in the private sector?
Yes, Senator. The average American uses 8 different apps to communicate with their friends and stay in touch with people, ranging from texting apps to email.
It's the same service you provide.
Well, we provide a number of different services.
Is Twitter the same as what you do?
It overlaps with a portion of what we do.
You don't think you have a monopoly?
It certainly doesn't feel like that to me.
Okay.
So Boothberg's decision is a major step forward for regulators like the FTC, which has long been a critic of the practices of tech giants like Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. And the judge managed to do it with a little bit of style. But what it will all mean for the substance of monopolies and tech? Well, to quote the judge himself, that's anyone's guess. Here to break down the lawsuit and antitrust laws is Rebecca Allensworth, professor at Vanderbilt Law School.
Antitrust law is the law of competition. It's what businesses can and can't do when they're competing with each other. What are the rules of the road? What goes too far?
I feel like our antitrust laws, and even as you say, sort of business and competition, that there's kind of a maybe even 19th, but certainly 20th century vision of that, as though there's like, you know, two hardware stores next to each other and the, you know, the sort of preserving competition between hardware store A and B. But that it, maybe those antitrust laws didn't imagine the 21st century realities of modern tech businesses.
I think there's a lot of power to that narrative. I mean, the main statute that we use to bring big tech companies to heel, I mean, the statute that's cited in all these current cases was passed in 1890. At the same time, the law has evolved through interpretation in the courts and was used in 2001 against a tech company doing things that are really quite similar to what's happening today. So I think that on the one hand, you're right that we have old law and an old law that was built up around what we call kind of smokestack industries, you know, maybe the hardware store, maybe aluminum. And at the same time, I think that there are places where it's evolved to be more responsive to what we see today.
What led us initially as a nation to needing the antitrust laws? What were the trusts that were considered most problematic?
Well, there was Standard Oil, which was an oil monopoly, essentially. There were the railroads. And it's conventional to talk about these things like they're monolithic, easy to imagine monopolies. And so we had to have trust busting against them. And it was easy because we could just break them up. And now different oil companies have to compete with each other. I think when you scratch beneath the surface, you'll see that even Standard Oil was a pretty complicated network of properties that related to each other in vertical ways. The railroads actually are really complicated because you've got network effects there too. So this is why I say there's power to that narrative that, oh, our antitrust laws are not prepared to take on this kind of networked techie thing. But then there's also this counter narrative that maybe business has always been somewhat like this and antitrust laws have always been somewhat prepared to deal with it. The real problem may be what happened in the 70s and since then in the way that the courts have interpreted these antitrust laws.
So let's talk about this recent decision by a federal judge. What does it mean for the Federal Trade Commission's case against Facebook?
The recent decision says it can go ahead. So in some ways, it means everything for their case. It's a necessary, but of course, not sufficient step in the direction of a winning case against Facebook and some real changes there.
But this is the same judge, right, who initially said that FTC had failed to provide sufficient evidence. So what was different this time?
That's right. And, you know, when I read his first opinion, I thought, oh, this is really rough. You know, it's getting dismissed and there's all kinds of skepticism in this. And then he comes out with this opinion where he says, oh, no, I always said that the market definition was fine. And I didn't address any of the competitive conduct. I was just worried about this narrow question of within the market of personal networking services, what is Facebook's share? The FTC has to tell me what their share is and how they got it, at least an estimate of it. And that was the flaw that caused him to dismiss the first complaint. And the FTC came back and provided an estimate of that share and why they thought that the number was what it was. And he accepted that. And so rereading that old opinion by him that I had read as so damning, it actually isn't that damning. Really, it says what he says it said, which is the real problem is you haven't told me how much of this market Facebook has.
Let's talk a little bit about that. What is the antitrust case against Facebook? And also maybe why are regulators pursuing it and continuing to pursue it even when, you know, they met big roadblocks like the previous ruling?
Well, I think the reason why they're still pursuing it is fairly obvious. It's both, I think, a good suit that has a lot of legs. Whether they will succeed or not is unclear, but it's certainly worth pursuing. And also there's a political problem if you bring a suit, it's dismissed, but without prejudice. You're sort of invited to replete it, and then you give up. You look like you've sort of rolled over in the face of big tech. So just politically, they're not going to do that. So they're making the claim that Facebook acquired Instagram and WhatsApp in order to forestall future competition from those companies, and that by doing so, they violated the Sherman Act, which prohibits monopolization. Monopolization is obtaining, or in this case, really more accurately, defending your monopoly by doing certain unlawful business practices.
So our production team is sitting down and we're, you know, talking about what we're going to have conversation about. And I was like, yeah. And you know what? When we leave this conversation, I'm going to go plan my Facebook Live for later in the month. So,
yeah.
So it always, I always feel this kind of ickiness in my belly as we are simultaneously wanting to cover the ways that monopolistic behavior on the part of Facebook might be harming consumers as well as rival companies, and also going and making use of Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram. Should I be feeling guilty, or is that actually the evidence of the monopoly itself?
I don't think you need to feel guilty. I think the fact that you have to go from doing this to go doing a Facebook Live thing is evidence that you don't really have a lot of options. You know everything you know about Facebook. You know all the bad things probably. And yet, what are you going to do? This is your avenue to your audience. This is your way of communicating with the world. And it is for so many people in so many contexts that you're not given a choice. And that kind of fundamentally is what antitrust cares about. And it's the way, it's that consumer choice idea is the mechanism of competition. I don't like what you're doing, so I'm going to go to your competitor. Your prices are too high. Your privacy policy sucks. I'm going to switch. And I think fundamentally, that's what Zuckerberg was worried about in 2012, that Instagram and later WhatsApp could become that place that people might switch to.
That helps me understand in part the way that it harms consumers, right? If I can't opt out. So how's that different from the fact that I can't change my cable company either because there's only one that serves my community?
I mean, antitrust wouldn't see those things as particularly different. I mean, if there's only one company that can serve your community and for cable, they, you know, have monopoly power. And then antitrust goes further and says monopoly power isn't unlawful. It's anti-competitive acts that maintain it or create it. And so if your cable company did things to make sure nobody else came into that neighborhood or other sort of predatory tactics, they too would be liable. Antitrust kind of doesn't care how like crucial or central or important. I mean, I'm not saying your cable isn't important. We all want our, you know, cable TV, but you know, they treat all markets kind of alike. I think part of why these cases are so high profile is because they are so much a part of our day-to-day and they're increasingly being seen as really essential. But that fact isn't particularly relevant in a formal way to the antitrust analysis.
Are there rival companies? I mean, and if there aren't, is it because of Facebook or is that because like, in other words, is that necessarily evidence that Facebook has engaged in particular kinds of monopolistic behavior or might it be that they're just really way far ahead and much smarter and better than anyone else and rivals have not been able to emerge?
This is not going to be a big part of the antitrust analysis because antitrust cares about the process of competition, not about the outcome so much. But there is a way in which Facebook is not a great product. I mean, my personal experience of it is that it doesn't add a lot to my life. And then increasingly people are coming out and seeing the harm that it's causing and to especially young people. So, you know, saying that they're dominant because they're awesome, I think is a little bit suspect. There's a different question though there, which is, are they dominant because the nature of a social network is you kind of have to have the whole market? There's a little bit more to this part of the argument in the sense that, you know, having two Facebooks doesn't quite make sense. Like, oh, I'm on Facebook A. Are you on Facebook A? No, I'm on Facebook B. Okay, well, I guess we can't be friends. That's not gonna work. So there's something called network effects. And when you have a market that's defined by network effects, it tends to get really big. Sometimes the competition is for the market, not within the market. And yet, you know, and Facebook's going to make these arguments and they make them strongly. There's a problem though, because if this is true, then why does Facebook need to do all these little machinations to make sure that it stays on top? That's the problem, I think, that antitrust law can really identify here, which is, okay, fine, maybe there has to be really large economies of scale for social networking. But, you know, that means that when Instagram starts up and starts threatening you, you got to improve your own products. You got to try to compete for that market, not swallow up Instagram to make sure you don't have to compete.
If FTC wins this, what might it mean for Meta's future? What kinds of actions could go forward?
Well, there's been a lot of talk of breaking up big tech, and I actually think Facebook may be the one company for which that would make sense in a big way, because there are these sort of natural product lines, these natural kind of points at which you could cut it off. You could spin off Instagram, you could spin off WhatsApp. It's a little unclear, though, how much that would get you. Facebook Blue, as they call it, you know, the Facebook that we all sort of know and use, would still be characterized by a lot of network effects. It would still have a huge market share. So, you know, I think a breakup in this kind of context is possible, maybe even likely if the government wins its suit, but it may mean less than we all would want it to.
Yeah, billions instead of gabillions. Thank you to Rebecca Allensworth, who is professor at Vanderbilt Law School. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. This was great.